This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodi. It is World Hepatitis Day today, the 28th of July, and the WHO highlights the urgent need for countries to enhance action to prevent something called viral hepatitis infection and to ensure that people who have been infected are diagnosed and offered treatment appropriately. In the studio with us, Dr. Noor Shahida Khairullah. She's the Honorary Secretary of the Malaysian Liver Foundation, and she's here to talk to us about World Hepatitis Day. Welcome to the show, Dr. Noor. How are you today?
I'm fine. Hi, Mira.
Okay, can you give us a quick introduction on viral hepatitis? What does that really mean? You want to tell us a little bit more?
Okay. Well, the word ITIS means inflammation. So if it's viral hepatitis, HEPA is liver, which means it's inflammation of the liver. In this case, it's because of a viral infection. So there are many viruses that can affect the liver, specifically the viruses in group hepatitis A virus, B, C, Delta, as well as E, are the ones we are looking at most of all. But the other viruses, to a minor extent, like some of the herpes viruses, such as tuberculovirus, herpes simplex, that can also affect the liver. So viral hepatitis is a description of a condition whereby a virus has attacked the liver and has caused inflammation.
Okay. Yeah. We always know the liver as a very resilient organ.
Yes.
It's able to regenerate, you know, it's got that ability.
Yes.
It somehow is not as strong when it comes to these viruses, as far as hepatitis is concerned. Why is that?
Okay. I love the liver. The liver is the seat of life. Actually, the liver is the most important organ in terms of detoxification in the body. It's the largest internal organ. When it's attacked by a virus, it can be also attacked by many things, including toxins. What happens is the virus will infect the cells that made up the whole liver. And we've got these cells called the hepatocytes. When it's infected, viruses are very clever.
They are.
Yeah. So
I call them the rascals.
They are the rascals. they're stupid viruses, clever ones, and the immortal ones like the herpes viruses. They attack the cell and actually take over the mechanism, the host DNA, and tell the body to produce lots of baby viruses, if you like. So what happens in the liver is because it has this inherent tremendous capacity to heal itself, it will not complain much. So if you look at hepatitis A virus, when someone gets infected, which means the virus is consumed by fecal oral route because it's transmitted to water, contaminated food, etc. When it goes to the liver, there will be certain signs that you can tell, or symptoms we say in patients, that will show that the patient has got an infection. For hepatitis, you've got four phases. The first phase, when you just got infected, depending if it's hepatitis A, within 3 weeks, you will see something. B, longer, about a month. C, about 2 months, etc. The person will feel tired, we call fatigued or malaise. They have vague abdominal pains, and then they have, of course, a loss of appetite, etc. And people who like to smoke suddenly just don't feel like actually having the nicotine load. And later on, it will progress to some obstructive symptoms. You get tea-coloured urine. Your stool colour becomes pale. And sometimes you, depending on the types of virus and at which stage, you can also get jaundice or the yellowing of the sclera. Sakit kuning, they called it last time, yeah? So basically, this will tell you when the patient presents to you, as to the doctor, we will know then something is wrong with the liver. And then we have to actually rule out whether it's an infection or because of something else, because drugs can cause that as well.
Okay. Yeah. We're discussing hepatitis with Dr. Noor Shahida Khairullah from the Malaysian Liver Foundation. If you have a question, we've opened up the phone lines. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. Do we have many cases of hepatitis in Malaysia, and do we have all of these viral hepatitis A, B, C, D, and E?
Yes.
Well, all of them exist in the country?
Yes. What we're saying now, you always look at the important ones, right? Hepatitis A is important. A long time ago, we were considered as a third world country, not anymore right now. But hepatitis A is endemic, which means it's there. And this is the one that spread because of poor sanitation. So some of the states in Malaysia has got more cases. On the upside, however, the cases that have more hepatitis A cases, they actually get or contract the disease when they're younger. So when they're older, they're protected. So if you look at a pristine state, so-called well-to-do state with very good sanitation, etc., they're not exposed to hepatitis A virus. When they get it in adult, it becomes more severe. Now, hepatitis B has been around a long, long time. Mm-hmm. Hep B actually is, it contributes to the main cause of liver cancer in this region. And the main mode of transmission is from mother to child. During delivery, there is a lot of exchange of blood because this virus is transmitted through anything that has blood contamination. So if you're contaminated with hepatitis B, you are infected. You might not show the symptoms when you are in the phase where the immune stage where you cannot be seen in terms of the symptoms. You can spread very easily. So that's why we say that spread through sexual contact, obviously blood transmission, as well as intravenous drug abuses and mother to child, innocently. Hence, in Malaysia in 1989, we started to have the universal infant immunization, where all infants born in Malaysia are given free hepatitis B virus vaccine, a dose of 3. So this has tremendously decreased the incidence of mother-to-child transmission. In fact, WHO has indicated that for the region, they want to bring the transmission down to an incidence of less than 1%. Mm-hmm. We've done that very successfully. I think I was in a rate of 0.3% or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the 1989 program has helped tremendously.
Tremendously.
Hepatitis,
yes.
B is concerned.
And also now we have better drugs to treat patients. And I just like to jump in terms of the role of the Malaysian Liver Foundation. If you look at the scenario, Mira, a lot of the time it's the lack of awareness. Yeah. So when we started way back in April 1996, we were looking at awareness not only among the population, the rakyat, but also awareness among doctors. So we didn't say that doctors know everything about hepatitis, so we believe that there must be this continuous education for everyone. For the rakyat, we go around the whole of Malaysia. We have this concept of hepatitis days. It's normally run over a weekend in a big shopping complex. And then we get partnership from the local medical association and some VIP to actually open up, and then we have public forum. At the same time, in the evening, we'll have doctors' forum as well, and we have teaching for doctors to look at the updates, the latest on management strategies. But awareness, if people are aware that there is a vaccine that can prevent liver cancer due to hepatitis B virus infection, why not go and have it?
And it's never too late.
Never too late. Okay, 1989, we started mass vaccination, yeah? Those born before 1989. Not all have been vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So the Ministry of Health at some point has started the catch-up vaccination, but not everyone has been vaccinated. So what we do in the hepatitis days is to actually offer free testing for hepatitis B. If you're found to be positive, we will then have you counseled and see whether you are in the range or in the situation, clinical condition that you can be treated. If you're negative, we give you a vaccine at subsidized rates.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you think is the deterrent at the moment for people coming forward? Is it the cost? Is it the inconvenience? What is it?
You know,
because it's three.
We were talking about the generation.
Right?
Yeah, we're talking about Gen Y, Gen Z right now. Yeah. The older generation, I must say, in as far as when we actually go around the nation to during our hepatitis days, they are quite cognizant of the fact that hepatitis can cause liver cancer. And those in the mid range, maybe 35 to 45, they are more receptive. But the younger generation always feel that nothing's going to touch them. Mm-hmm. So in terms of awareness, those in our age group, okay, above 40s, for example, won't say the real age.
Who says I'm above 40? Never.
We are forever young. They are more receptive. But for the longest time, we've been going out giving information awareness, but we need people from the younger generation to be in that group.
But wouldn't they have been immunized?
Those born before 1989? No. Some would have been under the catch-up vaccination, but there are a lot of people who are actually not aware. So each time we go to a state to have hepatitis day, we are always surprised. A long time ago, we did actually a survey to say the level of competence in terms of knowledge of hepatitis is extremely low still. So we actually need help. They are still low. So that's why we are here to assist Ministry of Health to actually create the awareness. And I think the deterrent is really people not being cognizant of the fact that health actually is a very personal matter. You have to be empowered to take care of your own health. What we're here to do is actually empower you with knowledge. Mm-hmm. But informed knowledge is one thing, acting upon the knowledge is another. And this is something which is quite rampant that we see in the younger generation.
Is hepatitis B the biggest threat among all the viral hepatitis?
Well, B and C, because these are the two viruses who are very clever and tend to stay in the body for a long time. Mm-hmm. Hepatitis B, when you actually get it during infancy, will not show any symptoms at all until you get to the age where you're most productive, late 40s. hepatitis C, it's very, very common among intravenous drug abusers. Both will cause liver cancer. Majority of the time in our area is hepatitis B. There are good treatments for both, and sometimes the treatment do fail. So in the Malaysian Liver Foundation, what we do is we assist the doctors by having specialized tests we call viral load testing. We need to see how much virus you have in the body, what kind of virus is there, and then we can then custom-made and tailor-made the treatment.
What I found quite fascinating is hepatitis B is said to be 50 to 100 times more infectious than HIV.
Yeah.
Yet HIV gets so much exposure.
Yep.
Hepatitis B doesn't. We need to talk about it even more.
Yes, yes, we do. Let's just touch on the fact that it's highly infectious compared to HIV. If you say 100 times, it means that if you have a virus that's like 10 virus of hepatitis B, you will need 10 times of HIV to infect a patient or a person.
Yep.
Yeah. Why it has not got the so-called glamour of HIV? Well, I think there are many reasons to it. Mm-hmm. So we toil on and we do create the awareness that, and this is an infection that you can totally prevent.
Exactly.
Okay? There is a vaccine available.
There is a vaccine, yes.
It's very cheap. It's not expensive at all.
Are we underestimating the power of the vaccine? Are we just taking it for granted that hepatitis B is not going to infect us?
Yes, yes.
It's not going to happen to me.
Yes, that's most of the time it's like that. It's not ever going to happen to me unless you already have a history in the family. Now, the other thing is this misconception that if you have one vaccine, which is against hepatitis A, for example, you're protected against all the other viruses or hepatitis viruses. That's not true because they're very different in very different groups. If you look at them in a virus sense, Hep A is a different species compared to hepatitis B and C. They've got different sizes, different shapes, and they infect in a very different way. The two that's most dangerous, hepatitis B and C, because they have this ability to take over the host mechanism in the cell and say, yo, you know, produce me instead of whatever you're supposed to be doing in terms of clearing the toxins from your body.
Okay.
So to target these viruses, first you must know that you have it. And that's why we say, act now, come forward to get yourself tested.
There is no vaccine for hepatitis C and E, am I correct?
Yeah.
There's a vaccine for all the others.
Well, A and B.
A and B only.
Yes.
So C, D and E, no vaccine.
No. D is, D must have a B. D is like, you know, if there's no hepatitis B virus, D cannot infect you because it's like a naked virus. It needs the envelope of the B virus.
Okay.
Right. So, but very good vaccines against A and B. And right now we have combination vaccines. If you don't want to be pricked five times, you can just have the combo vaccines and have just three doses.
Okay, fantastic. We're discussing hepatitis today. It is World Hepatitis Day with Dr. Noor Shahida Khairullah. She's the Honorary Secretary of the Malaysian Liver Foundation. If you have a question, we've opened up the phone lines. Give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Health and Living segment and we're discussing World Hepatitis Day. It is the 28th of July and Dr. Noor Shahida Khairullah, who's the CEO and Medical Director of the Malaysian Liver Foundation. I apologise. I have been introducing her as the Honorary Secretary. She's much bigger than that at the Malaysian Liver Foundation. Here to answer your questions on hepatitis. It is a very crucial area to discuss, actually. We've got five types of viral hepatitis, hepatitis A, B, C, D and E, all of which exist here in Malaysia. Of course, the most threatening one being hepatitis B because it leads to liver cancer
and C as well.
Let's just talk a little bit more about hepatitis C. We don't usually talk about it, but what causes it and how do we get infected with hepatitis C? Because hepatitis C is a leading cause of chronic liver disease, such as cirrhosis and cancer as well. How different is it from the other sort of viral hepatitis strains?
All right. Hepatitis C actually is in the same category or virus group as dengue virus. It's a flavivirus, we call it. So it's an RNA virus. Yeah. It produces chronic infection, and in terms of transmission, it's also by blood contamination. And so we have a lot of cases among our drug users, the injectors. And we started screening way back around 1991. So those who've had blood transfusion prior to that, we always advise them to actually go and have a checkup to see whether they have hepatitis C. Now, having said that, it's B and C. It's a tussle between the two, all right? As far as liver cancer is concerned, B is still winning because transmission through perinatal transmission is tremendous compared to intravenous drug abusers. But if you were to test all the drug addicts in Malaysia, they're all positive for Hep C. And Hep C becomes more serious when they are co-infected with HIV because obviously the lifestyle, the way the virus is transmitted is similar. Sexual transmission, IV drug abuse, anything that's contaminated with blood. You can go as far back as looking at also toothbrushes, razors, you know, if you have a bleeding gum, for example, that can be one of the very, very like not as common a cause as if you were to have blood transfusion. The thing about hepatitis C, like B, is it can last outside the body for a very long time. So even on dry surfaces or on fomites, as you call it.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, what is important is these viruses are able to stay for so long that it disturbs the liver, it damages the liver cells. So then the liver cells undergo a kind of mutation that leads to cancer. And of course, you have cirrhosis, which is really scarring of the liver. And then the liver cannot perform. And the liver is the major organ that actually gives you energy because it stores glycogen. That's why you feel so fatigued and tired. Just to digress a bit, now the liver, it regenerates itself at night. We're talking about between 11 to 2. Yeah. So what happens is when you eat, the liver has to produce lots of enzymes to emulsify the fats and digestion goes on. But in the evening, a lot of us now stay up late, eat very late as well. Mm-hmm. So as a matter of general speaking, we should actually have enough sleep to help the liver repair itself. It's an organ that can regenerate itself even though 2/3 of it has gone. So it doesn't complain. When it complains, means it's given up.
Mm-hmm.
And even so, you can still assist in the regeneration by giving them appropriate drug therapy, for example, for Hep C and Hep B.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've always been a proponent for not allowing 24-hour food outlets. I don't know about you. I'm probably going to get a lot of hate mail for this. But I think it will help us tremendously in terms of our health.
I would agree. And also the way the food is being prepared right now. You know, Mira, like eating late at night is really no good because there are so many other things that interplay in the body and it helps the body to regenerate. For example, your hormone levels, cortisol, which is a stress hormone. Do you know why you get hungry at midnight? Because at that time, you're supposed to be asleep and the liver is supposed to be regenerating, curing itself. But if you're awake, the body will produce a hormone called cortisol. That will make you hungry because it wants energy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then you are in activity, you're watching TV, whatever, and then it gets piled up as fat. So this contributes to a lot more. And the liver, if the liver is healthy, you will not get a weight problem because it's really good emulsifying and digestion as well is related to liver function,
right,
which also includes gallbladder.
Okay.
And yes, I agree, there shouldn't be outlets at night.
No, we shouldn't. Yes. I think we'll all be much healthier.
Yes, lifestyle is so important.
It is,
yeah.
Indeed. And, you know, some people are at higher risk of hepatitis C infection. And when I looked at some of the recent areas in which some of us are guilty of, without even realizing whether or not you know you're exposing yourself to hepatitis C, tattoo artists, body piercing.
Yes.
Online human breast milk craze, that's going on right now. Natural disasters such as flooding. I mean, does hepatitis C pose a big problem during a flooding situation?
Well, more of the enterically transmitted viruses like hepatitis A, for example,
okay,
and E. That's more of a problem. In terms of tattooing or anything that can be an exchange of blood, even in the doctors at the practice, they can even get a prick, a needle stick injury from a patient that's positive. They can also get infection that way.
Mm-hmm.
But tattooing, for example, right now, even if you go to the Indian barbers, they actually show you, they're changing the blade. They're using a sterile one. You go for, what do you call the embroidery?
Waxing and threading.
They now show you, yeah. So I was surprised because they have the awareness to show that they're using sterile needles. But how many of them do that? So these little outlets that do that, I commend them. Now, this is the way that you can transmit. Like, you do a tattoo, right? Tattooing. You do it on the person. Of course, there's a little bit of bleeding because you do quite deep, depending whether you want superficial or deep. The long-lasting one is deep.
Yeah.
Then there'll be blood. And because the virus can stay viable for a long time, even though it's dried, that can be transmitted to another person who's negative for hepatitis before, in pristine, the body is pristine against these viruses. But this infection, because it's highly infectious, hepatitis B especially, once you get it, you won't know, because it takes up to about a month sometimes before you feel tired and fatigued. And if you don't go for testing, in adults, if you procure hepatitis B infection as an adult, about 5% will go into chronic state.
Wow.
Yeah, you wouldn't know until there are signs from the liver.
So it is very much a silent killer, actually.
It is, yeah.
Very much. Yeah. And are we? What is our biggest challenge in Malaysia, trying to, you know, bring about a control as far as hepatitis is concerned? Or do you think we have it under control?
No. I really believe in empowerment through knowledge. And one of the ways we need to do this is to spread the awareness that we have the infection, though. Ministry of Health has done a very good job in bringing down, reducing the rate of chronicity in hepatitis B. In Peninsular Malaysia, it's about 5%. It's more so in East Malaysia. But when the advent of mass immunization actually was initiated in 89, the incidence of mother-to-child transmission has gone down. And liver cancer still is a killer. Top 5 in males, top 10 in females, you know, so it's still there. We need more people to come forward. And even the free immunization, sometimes they don't comply. You're supposed to take a course of 3, and then you're out of the hospital, right? The first one is when you are inside the maternity ward, and then you have to come back 1 month and 6 months. Sometimes they miss the dose. So you should go and get yourself tested. We need the awareness to be on all the time. Yeah, and we need people to come and support us in the Malaysian Liver Foundation, because we are totally charitable. We are a non-profit organisation. The economy is not so good, so funding is not forthcoming in terms of getting our work done. But we are here to assist the Ministry of Health and to assist the rakyat. We have all the information. Come look at our website, liver.org.my. You know, we have a Facebook as well. This weekend, we're going to have, in conjunction with World Hepatitis Day, an international conference called Liver Update in Sunway Lagoon Resort Hotel and Spa. I don't know why. You know the word spa? It's kind of a deterrent for us to get funding, because a lot of companies say, it's a spa hotel, you know, but we're doing the real thing here. So deterrent, not so much in as looking at the number of awareness that's out there in terms of the modalities of awareness, and we need a champion to come to be with our side. The younger generation needs to come forth. All of us have been there for so long. And the younger generation need to realise that they are responsible for their own health. After all, they are the future of Malaysia, right?
Yes, they are.
And you are helping us here, Mira, in BizFM, to actually spread the word that totally preventable liver cancer by vaccination against hepatitis B.
Yeah, so it's vaccination available for hepatitis A and B.
Yes.
No vaccine for C, D, and E.
No. Nope.
However, the most concerned, or what concerns us most in this country, are hepatitis B and C.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And C is the one which I think needs a little bit more attention at the moment, Dr. Noor, don't you think? I mean, with B, okay, you've got vaccinations, you've got an immunization program, national immunization program, but hepatitis C.
I say both because B is still the main cause of liver cancer. Mm-hmm. I say both, and B is easier to tackle, so we tackle the devil that we know first, you know. But C is there all the time. C is preventable if we were to try and decrease the amount of IV drug abusers, because that's the commonest, and of course people who go for dialysis. So all these groups of people need to know that the transmission occurs this way, and those already infected need to know that they need to protect the loved ones and the friends. And there are also treatment available. There's an oral treatment that's just been registered in Malaysia. Before, this is just injectables. Of course, there is a cost attached to it, but for C, there are good treatments available.
Okay. Yeah. For B, not so.
B as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So good treatment options, you need to actually get yourself diagnosed first.
That's correct.
With hepatitis C, Dr. Noor, one of the other ways of contracting it is through blood transfusion.
Yes.
And I read in the UK a lot of people taking the NHS to court because they have been infected with hepatitis C as a result of blood transfusion. Is that a problem here in Malaysia?
Well, it's a very loaded question.
She's thinking.
You know, that's a time when there was a lot of research. Before C was called C, it was called non-A, non-B. Yeah. So you're looking at the catch-up progress in terms of research and diagnosis. There was no diagnostic ability to do at that time. So when the moment the first generation hepatitis C serological testing was available, all Ministry of Health tested. So doctor's perspective, yeah. there are a lot of things that we don't know. And I think in terms of coming forward to sue the government, I don't think that's something that will happen in Malaysia, maybe in the US and the UK. But if the testing is available, it's not being carried out by the proper institution, for example, a blood bank, and you are infected that way, or the test is inaccurate, that calls for something that's legal, that's litigation is there, that's something that's appropriate. But if it's because of the deficiency in terms of research globally, I don't think we can blame anyone. Mm-hmm. So the best way is really to still prevent. Prevention is better than cure. Healthy lifestyle, I would advocate that very strongly.
Of course. Yeah. And hence the transmission mode. You also have to understand how it's transmitted, isn't
yes.
it? So you watch that tattooing if you're going for
it. Can you go to the tattoo place? Insist that it's a new sterile needle.
Exactly.
Yes.
And any other beautician that you go to for any sort of procedure. There's also a Ministry of Health Prevention and Control of Infectious Diseases Act 1988,
yeah.
which yeah. is mandatory for one to notify the ministry if you are in fact infected with hepatitis.
It's for doctors to do that.
For doctors. Is yeah. that a deterrent in any way for people
no.
coming forward? No.
Not really.
It's just for, what is the reason for this registry? Is it just to control
yeah.
or to understand
yes.
statistics?
To understand the disease prevalence within the country in terms of incidence, to understand how much funding the government need to put forth in the Ministry of Health to be able to control if there is an increase in cases, to find out where the case is coming from and how to prevent the cases, to get all the cases and get them treated and follow up. So that's important. But this is the duty of a general practitioner. When the patient comes to you with fatigue, jaundice, sometimes joint pains, just flu-like illness, they just need help. So when you do the testing and they're found to be positive, you have to report this.
And in terms of people who are in the high-risk category mm-hmm. for hepatitis, who would you say is in the high-risk category? And should actually maybe think of going to get yourself checked out?
Okay.
Are you saying all of us could possibly be at the high-risk category?
I think no, we're not all at high risk. Those who are obviously involved in intravenous drug abusers, people who have indiscriminate sexual activities, people who are within groups of people who are already infected, people who are actually chronic renal failure, going for dialysis, you know, or you have traveled somewhere to an area where it's rampant. So I think everyone, if they feel that they're not sure, they should go for testing. Children above the age of 1989 onwards, they should still go for hepatitis C testing later on. Yeah, definitely doctors before or students before they go to medical school, they're tested. But we don't get everyone to be tested because there is a cost to it. It's not free of charge. Which I don't think should be a deterrent because it's so cheap. It's like wondering it's something.
Because
to be
some
tested.
Of us may need a booster jab. Is that what you're saying?
When we test for the presence of the virus antigen, which means that if you're positive, you're infected. To test for adequacy of the vaccine is to test for the antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you had been vaccinated, maybe 5 years ago, you've had the 3 shots, and you're not doing activity like surgery, you're not a drug addict, you're not having multiple sexual partners who might be infected, etc. So you're not considered high-risk groups. So you're not an institution, mental institution, taking care of children who might be infected as well. Then we say you don't have to get tested for antibodies to get a booster. But if you feel you're at risk, yes, test for the antibody. If it's inadequate, then get one booster.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just to move on to hepatitis E, it's found in Malaysia as well. Is it a cause for concern?
No.
None at all. Because?
Well, we have more hepatitis A. See, Hep E came later. And in terms of hepatitis E, we don't have an outbreak, I don't think. For a long time, we haven't seen anything. And it's fatal in patients who are pregnant. You can get fulminant hepatitis E infection in pregnant ladies. Somehow or other, it becomes more virulent in those groups, but we don't have a concern for that. And that's basically sanitation still. You know, hepatitis A has a vaccine, so prevent the disease by vaccination. Those of us who like to eat, you know, you eat kuay tiao with this kerang, you know,
the cockles.
Cockles, they are called filter feeders.
Yep.
So if a large amount of water is infected, chlorination is inadequate, for example, during floods. The cockle are filter feeders. They take in lots of water, they filter it and concentrate it inside their body. So they do the same for the viruses. Mm-hmm. So raw cockles, if you want to do that, you can take your vaccines, then, you know, there'll be less chances of you getting hepatitis A.
Yeah. The UK is concerned because Hep E is naturally found in
animals.
Yeah. And pigs are responsible for the largest share of human cases. So any pork products, then you'd really got to be watching out for hepatitis E as well, depending on where it's coming from.
Well, they are carriers, but most of the time, we're talking about a fecal contamination by feces of an infected carrier, or on the hands of people preparing the food, mm-hmm. or in water. Yeah. So right now, sanitation is something that is we take it for granted because it's so good with indoor water, etc., and doing the job. Prevention is always better than cure. When you actually go to the toilet, you must make sure that you clean your hands properly. If you want to go and eat in an open stall, make sure that the food that is being cooked is cooked by someone who's... Well, sanitation is something that they observe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not a problem in this country. Yeah, but then having said that, we cannot really say for tomorrow. What we're saying is our sanitation system is very good, and they are not chronic carriers, not like hepatitis B and C. People who actually have the virus will shed the virus, and then the disease is self-limiting. Okay. So after a while, your immune system will take care of it, and then that's it. So you won't spread the disease anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Your message of this World Hepatitis Day?
Act now, and it's all up to you, because you are the determinant of your own health. You are empowered to do everything about yourself. You have the responsibility to do that. What we'll do is actually provide you the information. We have an organization that's here to assist you, not only to create the awareness, to give you the latest about prevention methods in hepatitis B, C, as well as A and E, but also we are here to be able to give you subsidized rates for testing and vaccination.
Thank you very much. And the website again?
www.liver.org.my.
Liver.org.my.
Yes.
You can't go wrong with that.
You can't.
Thank you very much for joining us
today.
You're welcome. Dr. Noor Shahida Khairullah, CEO and Medical Director of the Malaysian Liver Foundation. This World Hepatitis Day on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you, Mira.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.